do the casting and everything. You're going to go through this and that. You want us to make sure you got the right face and the right bod and everything. Casting California Girls. I think we went through 3.5 couches before we had the final cast.
Oh. Oh.
It is April 1988. Expo 88 just opened its doors in Brisbane. Do your hair, Cynthia. Russia announces they are withdrawing from Afghanistan, and MIT flies the pedal-powered glider Daedalus between Aegean Islands. But that's all Greek to you, because you thought you maybe had a date with Dennis from Second Period History to see Beetlejuice. And when you got to the cinema, you saw him with Angela to see Police Academy 5, assignment Miami Beach. April Fools, he shouts across the cinema. Why must boys be so cruel? Why didn't you see this coming? And what's going to happen at school on Monday, 3 days from now? Because, of course, April 1st, 1988, today, falls on a Friday. You're going to have a whole weekend to think about it, so maybe you can use an assist from Jane and the gang. Yep, it's time to...
Listen to Sassy.
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Pamela Ribbon.
Dennis. Oh my God. Wow, what a twist.
Shit. Ugh.
He probably already saw Beetlejuice with somebody else, and now he's going to see Police Academy 5 assignment Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm. But did he make both invitations at the same time and just went with whoever said yes that he thought was hotter?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just a observer like you guys in this as it unfolds, but I have my suspicions that Dennis had this all along and may have been in cahoots with Angela on this, that they made plans together.
Wait a minute, the whole thing? How many other people at the movie theater are in on it and they're there to watch me be set? Not me, you, the one, the sassy reader.
You know what? You should just grab your dad and go see Good Morning Vietnam, because he would probably love to spend time with you. And that's a movie he would really enjoy. Hi, Pam.
I got no comment on that. Hi, Tara. We'll get to it later. You know, luckily we have a whole section on boys coming up, so I can talk about Dennis then.
Well, Dave does not have any notable stories from his life in April 1988, but I do. Oh, it's a traumatic one.
Oh, okay.
Well, so at this time I was in grade 8, so all of us in my class went to tour the high school that we were all going to be feeding into the next year. It was a co-ed school. The girls and the boys were, you know, separated, and the girls got a tour from a girls junior that was going to be a rising senior. Boys, same deal with a boy. And at the end of it, we all got to hang out and sit in a circle and discuss what high school was going to be like. And sat on the floor with our legs, you know, crisscross applesauce, as you do when you're sitting on the floor. And I was wearing very, very light jeans, which were the style at the time.
No.
And what I didn't realize was that I got my first period that day. Ta-da! And no one told me, because it was that embarrassing.
You had a movie moment.
Yeah.
You really had a movie moment.
Yes. You hear these stories, or you read them on, like, the page in YM where it's like, my horrible embarrassment. You're like, these are fake. That one was real. It really happened.
I think I said that in the first episode, that these all sound like moot. And you're like, well, wait for it. And here we are.
Tara,
terrible.
I literally told a 10-year-old the other day, like, it doesn't really happen like that. That's just what they scare you.
It wouldn't happen now, because jeans are not that light. Like, they're just not.
Yeah, but you could have been wearing a skirt. You could, if you had just been in a skirt, I guess you might not have been. Well, I mean, if you, I don't know.
Yeah, in a gym skirt.
A gym skirt. Is this why you're a tampon rebel?
No. However, here's the even more mortifying part about that story. So that night, went home, told my mother, unbeknownst to me or whatever, you know, she told my dad off stage. I was not present for that conversation. And so at this time, do you remember when McDonald's had the Muppet Babies toys that you could collect?
Vaguely.
Sure.
I was collecting them because they were really cute. And my dad was like, do you want to go and get the new one? And my mom was like, she's too old for that now. And I was like, no, I'm not.
Wow, your world changed just like that.
This morning. And I was like, I still want them. This is ridiculous.
Before gym class, going to the store to get penny candy. After the gym class, savings and wise investment.
It wasn't gym class. It was a tour of my high school that I was going to be attending that fall.
I think maybe I projected because the closest equivalent of that is boner in gym class.
Right. So. Anyway, that was my April 1988 traumatic moment. Pam, what's your story from your April 1988?
I was also entering a new period because I turned 13. Yay!
Hey!
I guess maybe on that same day, I felt something like my womanhoodness came and found like, you and went straight to your uterus.
It was like Obi-Wan Kenobi and the Millennium Falcon in Star Wars.
Yes. Just,
oh, no. Something bad happened.
We got synced up, and it was not too many years later that we were to find each other on the internet.
It's true.
And that's it. I set out a distress call.
That is true.
I'm sorry. This is a nice time to apologize to you for that. I was waiting for the right moment. But the 13 for me came with clear nail polish. Hey, hey. And as I mentioned before, that trip to Merle Norman.
Wait.
Right.
What's clear nail polish for? Isn't that just like a protection layer
to
or
make
something?
Them shiny?
Oh,
yeah, okay. To make them shiny and
it's
pretty.
A glossy kind of thing? Okay.
Each year I was allowed a darker shade of pink.
Wow. I love that song.
It seems so quaint now. And it's funny because when I was first trying to write teen characters for television and trying to sell shows, people would always say, like, this protagonist just seems too sheltered and virginal. Like, kids are savvier. Aww. Like, why is she like this? And I was like, I don't know. I guess I don't know much about being a youngster. So I appreciate the youth of now that is like, I want to wear clear nail polish until I'm 27. I feel like I'm finally ready to be a teenager now.
All right, let us get into this issue, starting with our spine line, which is Get Set. We, of course, remember the first issue was On Your Mark. Second one, Get Set. You'll assume the next one is Go. It is not. They just drop it after the second one, which is, I have to say, very sassy. There's like, you get it. You get what we're going for.
Oh,
that's
shit,
enough.
People guessed it. I guess we'll just zig.
Yes, it was the lost purgatory island of magazine spine lines many years before its time.
Yeah. Open up page two, there's a big polar bear there. What?
It would have been funny to have Go as like their last issue of spine.
Oh, if they had known, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There aren't a lot in this episode, but in case you're listening to older episodes of our podcast and you're new to us, welcome, hello. We do visuals, pages from the magazine for what we're talking about, which is a lot of fun to see what we mean. So our first feature this month is My Best Friend Died of AIDS by Christina Kelly, which I have to think is one of the most famous articles of sassy, you know, that has lasted throughout the time, and that certainly was always mentioned as why Sassy was a very different kind of magazine.
I don't particularly remember this, but I do agree it's definitely well done. Mm-hmm. They have section breaks in it, and each one is sort of a different AIDS fact of the time. Feels sort of corny now, but was vitally important information at the time. This is something that we always talk about on our sister podcast again with this, which we're now talking about Melrose Place and the episodes that are would have aired in 1992, 93, 94. And they have a gay character, of course, Matt. Mm. And whenever they talk about anything to do with his character, which is not often, and to do with AIDS, which is not often either, it feels so hackneyed and all the lines sound like a PSA. And it's hard to cast your mind back to like, well, this was information people still needed to have spelled out for them. And in 1988, even more so. So in addition to telling the personal story of this guy, Chelsea, as he was known, it was a PSA for the readers at the same time.
Yeah, I was reading it, it definitely defined a lot of my high school writing style, which just, you know, facts in bold with stats breaking up the story. And then you'd get back into the truth and, you know, like switching between truth and sweet backstory. And then, which just kind of made it sad and true. That sassy style of, I'm talking to you about one thing. And as Dave pointed out last time, and then I remind you of STDs.
Yeah.
Like, is a real sassy trait.
Yep.
This is, I was reading How Sassy Changed My Life, and it said that Sassy was the first American teen magazine to accept condom ads, proving that its commitment to sex education extended beyond its health features. And I do feel like this was the time in school where they weren't sure who could or would or if they should talk to someone my age about HIV mm-hmm. and AIDS. It was, you know, I was in the South, so it was extraordinarily controversial and handled by someone named Coach. But as a first name, no other name necessary. And I don't know that he tried his best, but he also was a high school teacher. And so right. I was getting an older person's first try at telling young kids, I mean, you can't get it from the toilet, but also we don't know. One of the things that we did during that time, I remember, was we were learning about our blood types. And so we had to prick our fingers and test our, and like learn our blood. Mm-hmm. And my mom was livid. And I think because like she was like, we just got you guys like mixing your blood together at school during an AIDS crisis. Like I back then when we were like, watch out for phone booths or whatever. But
yeah,
I think it was all, they were way more terrified about blood on my fingers than sex in my body. So that led to a lot of confusion and scary stories.
I remember in high school sex education class, we had not the coach, but like the coachiest English teacher. Like, I think he was doing double duty or something yeah. like that. Like, but he was known as like the in your face, meaner than the gym teacher.
Sure.
And I can't remember his name, mm-hmm. which is great. Oh, McDonald. Damn. Okay. And he went to this kid.
Michael?
Yeah, Michael. And he says, so what are your testicles for? And he's like, Michael's like, I don't know. You mean you carry around these things 24/7? You don't even know what they're for?
And Michael was like, we're supposed to be learning about Macbeth.
And that was sex education in high school in Thorold, Ontario. And poor Michael probably his testicles shrunk up right inside after that exchange.
I mean, I think some of the details of the story make me think that the events that she's describing or that his friend John is describing to her happened many years before mm-hmm. this article was published. Like the dehumanizing treatment from the hospital staff when Chelsea was mm-hmm. in the hospital, like not cleaning the room, that they wouldn't get close enough to feed him, that feels more early AIDS crisis than how things would have happened in the later 80s.
Yeah, I was gonna
certainly
ask
in New York.
What the timeline is. Like when is the start of sort of the public awakening to the crisis versus when this was published?
Yeah,
how many years?
Mid-80s, I would say.
Okay, so yeah. Like 3 or 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Right. I would like to mention some other pieces of art that feel like they're around the same time or that would illuminate this period certainly in New York and elsewhere. You can watch Angels in America on HBO Max. The Normal Heart is on HBO Max as well. Pose on Netflix is particularly apropos, although it's more about characters of color. Chelsea, the subject of this article, is white, but it's also about kids who get kicked out of their homes for being gay and queer and how they find each other and continue to thrive in their chosen families. That's on Netflix. We'll link all of these on the show notes. And one that just started this week, although it's set in London, so it's slightly different, but it's called It's a Sin from Russell T. Davies, who created the original Queer as Folk. And it starts in 1981 and sort of tracks AIDS from like the earliest stories of like, I heard a thing about this gay flu and we don't really know much, to this is a conspiracy theory that's just trying to make us all too scared to have sex with each other, to understanding that it's real and action has to be taken. So I watched the first two episodes of that today and they were really great. So we'll link that in the show notes as well.
If you're someone who says all the time, like, you know, there used to be, before there was Hamilton, there was Angels in America, then you will also enjoy The World Only Spins Forward, The Ascent of Angels in America, a book by Isaac Butler and Dan Coyce. It's a oral history of the putting together and not just the mounting of Angels in America, but its legacy from both stage and screen. It's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it.
Our second feature, Dating a Rock Star, What It's Really Like, a classy problem most readers are probably never going to experience. But God bless Karen Catchpole for demystifying this as well. This is kind of a judgment call whether this should be in the pop culture episode or this one. But since it's more of a dating story than a rock story, I felt like we could talk about it today in our teen life episode. I appreciate the effort to de-glamorize what it's like, and that's mostly what the article is, since the target audience would definitely be spending a lot of time fantasizing about dating, marrying, mm-hmm. having the babies of a rock star. Mm-hmm. And this article really makes it seem like it sucks. Your headers are the boredom, the loneliness, the band who probably won't like you, the dates, the groupies, the glory. That's the part where you're watching him on stage and it's actually pretty cool. The morning after, the reactions, the grapevine, the breakup. So, yeah, mission accomplished. I don't want to date a rock star. Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, it definitely centered like, why would you want to be someone who waits around while someone else lives their dream?
Yeah.
Even that glory part is a little like the next best thing. It is like, do you like the shadows?
Right.
Date a rock star.
Yeah.
That's where you live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the subtext of be your own hero feels very mm-hmm. typical of the magazine's general ethos, which I also appreciated that it was already coming out this early of like, don't define yourself by who you date. Do cool things yourself. It's better.
Yeah.
But then they balance the ledger sheet by fronting David Lee Roth as a catch.
Yeah, David Lee Roth as the exemplar of rock star object of desire. I mean, even in 1988, you have to think he was already on the downswing. Oof.
We are recording this at the hopeful, knock on wood, tail end of a waterless household here in Austin due to the Texas snowpocalypse stuff. We had a water pipe burst and now we're without water.
Yeah.
My hair looks like David Lee Roth's hair in this video, and I haven't showered in 5 or 6 days. I'm just saying, you see the videos of him at this time, you're like, what? Really? Sassy? Really? Him?
Yeah. I liked David Lee Roth.
No, you didn't.
I did. When you had to choose between all of those hair boys, I mean, there was Sebastian Bach.
You didn't.
Yeah.
You could choose none of them.
You must have one long hair boy
have
crush.
One.
No.
I don't know. I had to have a lot of opinions about a lot of things, and one of them was this. I don't know.
Mm. All right.
I it came up a lot. If who you don't have your immediate who's your Van Halen person?
No.
Mm. Wow. Like you don't have a David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar preference?
Oh, Sammy Hagar is the guy who manages the barbecue place in your town. This, like, okay, David Lee Roth, no, but him versus Sammy Hagar. Okay, fine, mm-hmm. David Lee Roth. Like, that's the one.
Yeah. Yes, that's in terms of musicianship, not in terms of fuckability. Like, pass on both.
Okay.
For me, no judgment of you.
Sure. I saw them at the Mistake on the Lake and Hagar was fine, you know. I really pulled it out. I'm impressed. Of all the people that we had to choose, I mean, at the beginning, they were all like, okay, Sting. Like, they let him in.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, he wants to build a fortress around your heart.
He does.
There are, and speaking of all the, like, shout-outs and celebrities that get dumped into here, it really does remind you that the Beastie Boys have had a complicated relationship with their press clippings.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to.
Are we
going to
get into this? I mean, I guess we have to acknowledge it.
No. We can talk about it without having to say it. But there's a slur in here from Adam Yao talking about Molly Ringwald and how Adam Horowitz is not hanging out with them enough, and he's hanging out with his fancy, by the way, successful actress girlfriend. So it totally goes against the whole concept of this, because
right? Because they're dating at the time.
Yeah. But anyway. I don't even know when I was newly 13, I would have known I was reading a slur at that point.
Well, because they try to like soft soap it. The mm-hmm. slur is yeah. the slur is a word. They use a word for.
It's in context. No. It's fine to say it. I don't,
right.
why
I don't think
this
so.
Argument.
I don't want to. I don't want.
Okay, fine. Pam, then you figure out how to say it then.
She's in Pretty in Pink. And then he said some other word.
That rhymes with pink.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, and then they were like, that's just Beastie Boy talk. And I was so bummed out in the reread because I, you know, now where I was like, I don't even remember these kinds of things being peppered into here, this casual racism. It's so unsassy to have that kind of quote. But maybe right. I'm going to find out I'm wrong more and more as we read.
Yeah. That A, that they could, that they said it, B, that they printed it, C, that they tried to like massage it and act like it wasn't a slur when it clearly is.
Yeah. And that D, everybody's mad about other things in this magazine instead of this.
Yeah. There's also, less offensively, the second Madonna sideswipe in as many issues, talking about mm-hmm. her making bad movies as, like, part of her career, and then, quote, makes you feel kind of sorry for old Sean Penn after all. Wrong. No, it doesn't. Yeah.
No.
Like, no. She's also made her mistakes, too, but he's worse.
Is he a villain at this point? Has he been doing his bad boy stuff?
Well, he was a bad boy, but I don't think it was really publicly known that he was a domestic abuser okay. of her.
That's what I was asking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And when I say bad boy, I mean in temperament, not referring to his movie
Bad Boys.
Which is like one of the first movies I remember seeing on VHS. And the only thing I remember, if you don't know it, here's a spoiler, but he is a juvenile delinquent. He gets sent to juvie. And he runs into problems there with the other delinquents.
Sure.
And he has to fight back. And the way he does this is he gets a pillowcase. He buys every can of soda he can from the vending machine, fills up the pillowcase, and thwaps a guy with it.
That would hurt.
Yeah. That's prison ingenuity. Hmm. The mother of invention.
There's also a copy error in this issue. They write, whose turn? W-H-O apostrophe S instead of W-H-O-S-E, which is correct. Sloppy.
I want you to have a sound effect every time you find one. Ping, you know.
That's a really common one because it looks like it's right, but it's not. It's who's, like Joe's.
This head copy that made me laugh out loud. It is, okay, we all know how sexy a guy can look on stage in his nice baggy suit. I can't sit. What a nice baggy suit.
Oh, you're so roomy.
It's funny because we've been rewatching Seinfeld from the beginning as our like going to bed show, and the jackets on Jerry in the opening like stand-up scenes, he's like, he looks like a Romulan. Like, his jackets are so wide. The shoulder pads.
What's the deal with the Federation?
They're so Starlock big.
Yeah. You can't even find Chandler in the scenes he's in. There's just a suit walking it's around. It's crazy. Such a good baggy suit. I just don't know how anybody would record that in a sexy way. Hi, I'm here to get my husband a nice baggy suit.
Well, before we move on to our next story, a link for you to check out if you want to know how actually unglamorous dating a rock star is. I'm going to point you to Perfect Tunes, the latest novel by Emily Gould, which the first section of it is about that, about dating a guy who's a rock star on the come up in the early 2000s, and then the story takes a turn, and it's excellent. I devoured it in probably a weekend, which is very fast for me because I mostly like to watch TV these days. So I recommend it very highly, and we'll link that in the show notes.
Brakes in a bus, brakes on a car, brakes to make you a superstar, brakes to win and brakes to lose, but these here brakes rock your shoes, and these are the brakes. Break it up, break it up, break it up.
If you're following along in your hymnals, listeners, it's time for you to flip that magazine sideways, open it up halfway through on page 74, and check out this center field. This boy took off his baggy suit, and now we're going to learn the truth about his body. I opened this and was like, whoa, do I remember this? Maybe there was a long break before the third issue, or I got the second issue first. I really don't know, but this was definitely my sassy intro, all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Not just this centerfold, but a lot of this magazine, I was like, I remember this very much. So what they do here at Karen Catchpole has a cartoon drawing of a dude who's in his boxers that are got hearts all over them. And he's got a little piece of toilet paper on his cheek, and he's got a little bit of chest hair that looks more like the beginning of what is truly shingles. And if that happens to you, you should go to the doctor. That looks like shingles, 100%. And then it says, stop blushing. All right, if you have to blush, go ahead. Now stop looking at the picture and start reading. It's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about boys' bodies. That's how you're supposed to read it out loud. The illustration by David Bryon. It's not Brian. It's Bryon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that would attack the Battlestar Galactica.
Starlog.
The Bryrons.
Starlog Dam.
Starlog.
By your command.
I think if this article were written now.
Bryon's coming in. I hear it now, too. Bryon's on your left. I know how to get to the boy's heart and their funny bone. I don't know why they didn't mention the funny bone and the truth about boys' bodies.
It's a great point.
It's an important part. It's an important part.
So the 2021 version of this story, I think, would probably have less of the author's personal sexual preferences in terms of guys' bodies, what she likes, what she dislikes.
She likes them Asian and hairless is what we're learning.
Which is great.
Or she likes them Asian because she thinks they're all hairless, I think is actually more accurate here.
Perhaps.
She likes a smooth boy.
Yeah.
In baggy shirt. Lots of room to get her hands under and not feel the hair.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So we also learn the left testicle is always, they say always, lower than the right one. And I have to ask.
Yeah. Is that true, Dave?
Our boy on the panel, A, is this true? B, it doesn't vary with, like, handedness or something that seems crazy to me.
Or age or bike ride ability.
Right.
Like, can you eventually...
Just checking.
Well, you probably can't tell where you're sitting.
No, it's true.
Okay.
Yeah. It is?
Yeah.
Not always?
Wow. Yeah.
Do they teach you that?
I mean, it's true in my case. I don't know if it's like, I don't walk up to somebody else and say, hang on a sec, and like, you know, double hand them. And
Well, I would say every girl knows that one boob is often bigger than the other.
Right.
But so I'm asking, because we talk about shit, Dave. So do you guys ever, like, I suppose you don't tell each other I'm a left or a right or have a secret handshake to talk about which way you lean, but...
No, we don't do testy tests.
Oh, my God. And it's not mentioned in your sex ed class, like, you'll notice that those testicles always have one to the left and it hangs lower.
If your testicles have dropped, check them out. Get out your rulers and protractors.
This is called a food scale.
You carry those things around 24/7. You don't even know if one's lower than the other. Get the hell out of my class. I'm Mr. McDonald. All right, I have a terrible testicle story for you, though.
Great. Oh, yay. I hope it has its own song.
Because as soon as I heard you say testicle, it popped in my head. So now I have to say it. I had at one point in my life around my like late teens, early 20s, all these things go wrong with me. I had a ulcer in my stomach that healed and scarred so much that it closed off the bottom of my stomach and I couldn't eat anymore. Ooh. And then I had a hernia at the same time. Actually, I had two. But the first, I had a hernia and this is how I discovered it. So I'm peeing and like just to remind you, I know it didn't say it in the article, but boys usually pee standing up. And so I was standing up at the toilet peeing. And I'm like, and you hold
down
and you hold things. And like, sometimes just depending on where you are and what's going on in your life, sometimes you're just like dealing with the rod and sometimes you're dealing with the rod and the tackle and all that kind of stuff. So in this particular case, I had a couple fingers on my guys. Look, it just happens. Sometimes you have to adjust things mid flow and your fingers go places. Anyways, there I was. Well, there's that testicle. Yep. There's that testicle. Oh, yeah, there's my third testicle. Wait a moment. One hospital visit later, we discover that Dave's intestines, a little bit of it, just a little bit, plus a little bit of intestines, dropped into my scrotum, and it really felt like I had three balls.
Oh, Just so everyone at
you
home
know.
There isn't, not one of us hasn't spent most of the story holding their face with one or two hands. We have not made eye contact on the Zoom.
And I've heard this story many times. By the way,
I have to tell you, it started getting more and more familiar the more Dave told it.
You know how at Passover, you know, you do the whole speech and all that kind of stuff? We have the same tradition here, but it's the testicle story. When I passed over my testicles.
Yes.
So anyways, I'm here to answer all your questions.
Great. It's stood the testes of time.
All right. So we also learned that taking a cold shower will make a boner go away. And we have made fun of everyone on Darren Star shows on Again with this. Make jokes about taking a cold shower when people are too horny. So I guess we owe them an apology because apparently that's a real thing that works.
I've never. Oh, no. A boner. I was in gym. I was having an embarrassing boner. I raised my hand and said, "Coach, can I hit the showers? Cold as you can make it, please." It didn't happen. So I cannot provide empirical firsthand knowledge of that. Sounds real, though.
Tara, did you read any section other than the penis section? Just curious.
No, but I read all of the Pam, I am a professional. Of course I read all of them. I just had nothing else to say about the sections. I don't care about chest hair. I don't care about foot size. Give me a break.
I've been trying forever to get this quiz into the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show called Hirsute Pursuit, all about hairy celebrities.
Yes.
Like Robin Williams with a lot of hair. And
Burt
hasn't
Reynolds,
happened yet.
James Eckhouse.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There you go. I'm just saying, I she goes on about hair a lot. I inherited my grandfather's body hair. I got a lot of it. Mm-hmm. You know, when some guys like go back into like you're watching a movie from the 70s, right? Mm. And it's set in slummy, gross New York. And there's that guy, and he's probably from an Italian family because that's the way it worked. And he's got the wife beater shirt on.
Yeah.
And the straps over his shoulders are elevated 1 inch by the curly hair in his shoulders. That was my grandfather. Mm-hmm. Now, what I have is like something a little bit lower than that, but I'm still a very hairy gentleman.
True.
And I feel like society says no to that now. And it's very traumatic to go to the beach. All the kids stop and point, "Hairy man, hairy man." Man, they'll say, and I'll run away crying. Let's just pause. Let Pam collect herself.
Well, it's, you know how sometimes when you hear something, the image in your head makes an image, your head makes an image. And then as they keep talking, you're like, "I had the wrong image in my head. I have to alter it." I pictured Dave receiving a treasure box at a lawyer's office that when he opened it up, he had inherited his grandfather's hair. An inheritance, one might call it.
Right.
And then I was like, oh.
Inheritance. Boo.
Sorry, I can't help it. I'll stop. Anyway, there's other stuff about boys, but who cares?
Yes.
I was given a book. This just reminded me that what I was grateful for in this magazine is they're just being honest. They're using words for what they are. And they aren't like, "When you look at a willy," or, you know, "his little dinker's going to," like, none of that.
That's the grossest thing in this episode so far. "His little dinker?" Is that what you said? You say dinker?
I just made it up, but I think it's going to catch on. Speaking of Australia, doesn't it sound like it's it sounds like when an Australian's like, "He put his dinka in a real moose canoe," you know. That's not
nobody's
gonna
know which
Australian
way you want to turn on the highway if you don't turn on your dinka.
I think it's good, but anyway, I had to learn about dinkers from before I hit Sassy. My mom gave me the book that her mom gave her instead of any conversation. And it's this book by Lois Pemberton called The Truth About... it's called The Stork Didn't Bring You. All right, can't, I'll wait.
No, go.
No, I'm going to wait. I can't.
I'm listening.
You know what? But, you know, I want him to come back so I can tell him he's got a dinker and a dongle. Just left dongle.
That's not going to help.
I know.
I mean, he really is, like, far away.
He's gone.
He's in the kitchen.
Oh, my God.
Well, since I called them out for the incorrect usage of who's in the previous article, I'm going to applaud them for the correct usage on Pee-wee Herman, big P dash small W. Tons of places get this wrong, and they got it right. Good job, guys. Mm. Then we move on to The Divorce is Only the Beginning by Catherine. Illustrated for some reason by a very sexy photo of a girl in a black mini dress sitting on the edge of a tub looking sad about her parents' divorce or her own. It's hard to say. It's a very weird choice.
Did you read the copy around her?
Yeah,
it doesn't make things better. Yeah, it's like... Well, it's like she's writing in her diary, just for in case you don't have the illustration in front of you. It's a picture of that girl on the tub and written in her handwriting around her. It's like doesn't say dear diary, but it's like dad called. He was supposed to take me out for my birthday tonight, but the old witch had to drag him out of there, all the fun or something at the last minute for some stupid reunion. So it's just her slagging on her stepmom.
Yeah. So the rest of it is how to put your life back together after your parents get divorced, including, you know, be prepared that your mother might not want to make the house nice for you because she had to go get a job after your dad left. Yeah. And also, quote, it's possible doing housework reminds her that her family is no longer a family exactly. First of all, fuck off. Second, yes, it is. Third, maybe try helping her, which is, you know, what they say.
They do.
But
it does seem like someone's divorced mom wrote this somehow. Like, it's very much like, I think you should think about this from your mom's point of view over and over and over. Like, your dad kind of sucks or this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. The dad is really not mentioned about this at all. It's very assumes that you're living with your mother as your custodial parent, which statistically is probably the case. Mm-hmm. But yeah, generally, this seems like solid advice that is not overly optimistic or prescriptive. You know, the overall vibe is expect this is going to suck. And remember, your parents are people who are going through their own shit. So
I'd like to note that your first Christmas is going to be terrible. I thought that was a good way to sum everything up. Like, it's going to be weird. It's going to be awkward. It's not going to be fun, but it's temporary, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that was like, if you had to nutshell it, that would be the subheadline for this.
Yeah. I really liked that it was like, nothing will ever be what it used to be ever again. And even moved into those stomach aches and things that you're getting may not be that you're sick. You might be super stressed and it might be this. And so stop worrying that it's about tests and realize that your life is like you're going through trauma. Mm-hmm. Now we have our fiction piece, What Sudi Didn't Tell Me. And this time I knew it was fiction, not because it's stamped in the sex corner like, Pam, this is fiction, but because the main character is named Sudi. That's not a name. And because her boyfriend, the skateboarder, is named Spin. And I was like, this is some fanfic about bulimia, and I don't hate it. I don't hate it. And then the stories told were... It's like a girl talking about her best friend who seems to be very obsessed with losing a little bit of weight, and she's starting to realize that perhaps it's deeper than just a short-term thing. And I think the way that it would have been handled these days, the only way I would think it would be handled differently is at the end it would have given some advice or links or phone numbers for if you recognize this in you or in someone you love. It's called, like, they don't even really call out what this is. It leaves it suspended. You don't know if Sudi gets better, if anyone gets her help. They're all kind of too nervous to tell her, honestly, that they want to help.
It's also by Christina Kelly, which makes it seem like perhaps they forgot to commission short stories from outside fiction writers, and she just had this, perhaps, around. or whipped it up, because it is very short.
It is, but it's also very direct in a very high school-y kind of way, which
is
not super great.
Yeah. I have in my notes, the message is how you say inelegant.
Yes. Thank you.
But, you know, consider the audience. It's not us. It's teenagers.
I mean, certainly if it was this compared to last month's piece of poop, you know, this is a step in the right direction. So I appreciate that it even does sound like you can write fiction too. Doesn't this sound like what you write when you talk about your friends? So that's nice.
Also, one of the objects of desire is Brian Bloom, who had just been on the cover of YM in December, and I have that issue.
Who is that?
He's a soap star.
Oh, okay.
He was a soap actor.
Teens watching soaps? Is that a thing? It's like, is that?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah?
Okay. Yes, for sure. It was more a thing in the summer. Like, they would have special storylines that would be for teens in the summertime. That would be more of teen interest. But, yeah, like, by then, people had VCRs.
No, I just kind of, soaps to me are like kind of a 40 and up kind of thing.
No, there were like heartthrobs for teens at this time. Jack Wagner, Rick Springfield, the rest.
I was not allowed to watch soap operas, but one week I was home with the flu or something that I started watching Days of Our Lives, because that's the one a lot of my friends talked about. Mm-hmm. And the entire week, someone was slowly getting dropped into a vat of acid, but didn't. And I remember, like, I was like, oh, these are all the names I've heard people say.
Yeah.
It all made sense. And for decades, like, I guess I was like, I wonder how many months he's been lowering her into this vat of acid. I don't know what happened.
We were in another world family. And then when Santa Barbara started, I watched that because it was on in the summertime, too.
There was a week, and I'm going to say just a week, where it was also in summer, now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. And the neighborhood kids, the older kids, were all like, you got to watch this show. It's on every day. It's called Dark Shadows. And it's a soap opera, but it's got vampires and werewolves. And I remember watching one episode. And I'm sure it's the corniest fucking thing in the world, but I was, whatever, 5, 6, Barnabas Collins scared the living shit out of me. And I would not watch another one. So I've seen exactly one episode of Dark Shadows, a show that Tara is trying to get us to watch now because it's on Amazon Prime. And I keep on saying it's best you don't watch it because it is probably way better in your head than it would be in reality.
I'm sure.
This month, Sassy's on the road in Austin. Which clearly is why I lived there for many, many, many years, even though I don't remember that it's happened. But I definitely remembered this whole spread and all the Austin facts, and that it was made for me and you and you and you too. I appreciate that they spelled y'all correctly. I don't care how old you are right now listening to this podcast. You can still do it right from here on out. Y apostrophe A-L-L, you all, not y'all.
Yeah.
It's called Burn It, Durn It, Learn It, as Becca Sadler likes to say. That's a little Austin joke for some of you. Like, I wasn't cool enough to do this Aqua Festival. It looks like it was there almost the whole time I lived in Austin, and it moved to Auditorium Shores, which was just that was too far away for where I lived on campus. But when I went down a deep dive on Aqua Festival and the end of it, it was what launched Battle of the Bands.
Oh.
And then I immediately was like, oh, this is a fun. When I was doing comedy in Austin in 1999, I'm going to say, is maybe the year. Mm-hmm. My comedy troupe got booked at the Battle of the Bands, like between gig MCs, like doing stuff. This year, instead of Battle of the Bands being at any place where bands play, it was at the Metropolis Apartments pool off Oltorf.
Okay.
Which was at the time like cool and new and arty. And but no one wants comedy during music. I don't know why they keep doing it.
Yeah.
But no one wants it. No one wants it. They just want to throw things at the clowns. So there was that. It went so poorly that because it was people standing around an apartment complex pool looking up at us dorks, like yelling, and it was cold. And I just remember it got so bad that Matt Sadler just jumped into the pool from the stage, quote unquote stage. And that was the best response. Everybody went wild. And then he was like, I gotta go home. And then we realized he was the smartest one. So he got to leave. And the whole night went similarly. because the judges were supposed to be Matthew McConaughey and Sandra Bullock.
Whoa.
But then they broke up. And so what we had was Matthew McConaughey's mother and not Sandra Bullock. And some guy who worked for Paul, what's the hair care,
Paul Mitchell?
Paul Mitchell, yeah. So at one point, it goes so poorly that judges are leaving. Mr. Paul Mitchell leaves. And that is how Pam ended up judging the Battle of the Bands with Matthew McConaughey's mother.
Wow. My God.
I think of that girl and her band that we made win so many times and wonder what happened after that when she got that trophy at the Metropolis.
What was Mrs. McConaughey like? Like, does she seem like the mother of...
Was she all right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Not to plug again, but once I read Green Lights, a story and a poem, an epic poem by Matthew McConaughey, it made a lot more sense, my night with Matthew McConaughey's mom. And that's all I'll say about that. Anyway, that's your long story about On the Road, but where else am I going to use it?
There's a picture of Chewie's, as Pam already mentioned, with the hubcaps outside. It is still there on Barton Springs. I fucking miss it.
More shovels of nachos for you.
Thank you. Chips by the scoop. It's one of the first places I'm going to go when it is safe to.
Oh, I want a margarita from there, too. Oh. I want to eat in the hubcap in the Elvis room. I want to go sit in Too Many Colors and eat at Chewie's. Yeah, I love that Sassy will fit an STD, they'll work an STD into any page. And here, yes, there are armadillos in Austin, but they're rumored to cause leprosy. All giant font. And I am starting to realize why I was terrified of all STDs. Because just an armadillo could give you one. Just going to, you know, spring break in Austin, and they're like, how did you have sex? And you're like, I hugged an armadillo, dad, my own fruit pie. I touched an armadillo on the dinker, and now I have leprosy, dad.
So we moved Body Talk to the teen life episode because it feels like it matches up better with Help versus stories about Bangs and Guerlain's Pebble Foundation. So, you know, we're still messing with the format. So here it is, Body Talk today.
I'd like to talk about pap smears because I was impressed that I don't mean, oh, it sounds like I started a commercial. I'd like to talk about pap smears. Have you noticed you've had a baggy suit lately? So this hints at HPV. I made Dave go to a faraway place. I saw it in his head. He was like, I'm not here. And it was just like, and then he decided to come back. Anyway, they talk about how important it is to get a pap smear. They say it like 18 or up, unless you're sexually active. And they hint at HPV here. I'm just very impressed with Sassy, like right from the beginning. They do talk about your vagina as a vagina, and they'll use the word flaps. And like, they don't care. They're like, we're just going to talk to you honestly, as opposed to, again, the stork didn't bring you, which was like, you might have noticed your twinkles. Might have noticed your twinkles need an update every once in a while. I got to lube the chassis.
Twinkles.
Had they come up with another name for this, by the way? Like, is there a more marketable name for a pap smear? Like, you know, that doesn't have the word smear in it.
No. Well, they don't really give a shit what you think, Dave.
I'm just saying, if they're like, well, not enough women get pap smears, so let's call it something else, you know?
Lots of women get them. It's not a big deal.
Okay.
They tried schmear, but we said no.
Don't like that one either.
They have a little item about cross training, and the only thing I wanted to say about it is that it's nothing like CrossFit as we know it now, as the scary, extremely aggro place that has to have its own gyms so that they can be segregated from the rest of the normal exercising population. This is just about do different things so you don't get bored.
Yeah.
But the reason that I think it's noteworthy is that they basically are like, careful that you don't exercise so much that you get exercise bulimia, because that is a thing that girls would get. Definitely at this time, and it's important to note that. So, good job, Sassy. So then we have this month's help column advice. Some of these are a lot, starting with the first one, which has the very misleading headline, Loving Dad. And I'm just going to read this so that it can make your head explode. I am 17, and my mother died when I was 8 months old. I have been with my father for as long as I can remember, and I have loved my father since I was 12, not in the way a normal girl loves her father, but in a sexual way. Just last week, I was asked out by a boy I really like, but turned down his offer because my father asked to have intercourse with me. I know it's wrong, but I really love him. What should I do? Stacy.
I don't think Stacy would write it that way if Stacy was actually writing about this. It's too structured. It's too this but this. It's too, and now here's the reveal.
Right.
Like, it's too manufactured.
I guess. Still. Yikes. Yikes to the letter and yikes to the advice, which is you should get therapy together. But should you, though, get it together, really, when you think about it? Or should you be removed from the home? is my feeling. Leaving aside the question of whether this letter is fake, which let's assume it is.
Yeah.
I guess the idea is not to scare or shame the letter writer. And if she thought this was something that she could tell a trusted adult, she would have. Also, the fact that she also wants to have sex with her dad is a problem, but get therapy alone. And then the end of the advice is like, hey, go out with that guy that asked you out. Like, no, don't try to go out with anyone else until you have talked to a professional about this for a while is what I think. Yikes.
Okay, it's fake. I mean,
sure.
This is a hypothetical thing about something that didn't actually get into the Sassy inbox.
Yeah, help always was a little scandally, and that's why it's in the back of the magazine. This is what I was thinking about, how it's the original Dr. Google, but it was really like, did you hear? Like, I just want to know, like, what are these bumps and what is this and who's having sex with their dad? It did have this tone for a bit. Like, even calling that loving dad is not, they weren't really worrying about trigger warnings or...
Right.
Like, that they don't use the word incest here is unfortunate. That you really, it will go wildly back and forth between, we're going to talk to you honestly about your vagina, but we're going to make you, your dad asking you to have sex, something that happens to most girls at a certain time of age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It did seem like a reaction to the first set of questions in the last issue, which were pretty kind of sane and boring and sort of... normal-ish, you know what I mean? But you, sort of...
What? That boy gets out of a pool and makes out with her mother. But, what are you talking about? This is the exact same spot and literally just the other one. Like, and now I'm a dad.
No.
I was trying to clean my brother's room and dad said...
One is Babysitter's Club. The other is like VC Andrews or something like that. Like,
yes.
Like that's like the tone is different in the second.
Right.
Yes. For
yes.
Sure.
Yes. True. That's true. When we move right into vaginal bumps...
That's when you're going to have an interview with Johnny Carson, but...
But then the Julia Roberts runs long.
We'll try to have your vagina on next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Joan Rivers kept getting, the vaginal bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see if there's an opening for you.
Gonna slot it right in. Oh, boy. Gross. Vaginal bumps also takes a minute to just throw in. Sexually transmitted diseases. Like, they're like, it's fine. You're probably fine. You might have chlamydia, but you're probably fine. Go to the doctor. It's probably an STD. You're fine. And I really do appreciate that this time they do say, if you don't want to talk to your parents or a doctor because it's just, this is all too mortifying, you can call Planned Parenthood. And then it tells you how, like, more than one avenue to find a Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
And it's cheap and they'll keep your visit confidential. It's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. So it hooks you in with the VC Andrews and then it hides the actual good, true information. So maybe I'm just looking to find the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Stuff. Things?
The subversive nature of being an informant, of, you know, Sassy being an older sister.
Yeah.
Of like, your parents are going to freak out about this first article and never get to the stuff where we actually tell you about Planned Parenthood. Right. Maybe there's that.
Hmm. So we also have, basically, I got stat raped and now I'm pregnant. The letter writer thinks it's likely that her mother is going to throw her out if she tells her. But the advice is like, well, just tell her, it'll probably be fine. Whereas I feel like if you actually think it's likely, maybe have a backup plan, like have somewhere else to go before you try to have this conversation. Also, probably don't count on this guy to be very much help with your pregnancy because he broke the law getting you pregnant and he surely knows it. You know, like 5 years is a big difference when you're a teen in your ages. And then we also have an abusive boyfriend who the letter writer's mother says, if he hits you, it's your fault, which like feels like the bigger issue here, you know, like yikes. And that sort of seems like it doesn't get as much play as it should in the answer, in my opinion.
Yeah, they really pump up like it sounds like your friends are on your side and that's who you should talk to. But they do really avoid the, first of all, this is not your fault. Well, it does say he's using you, but it's not your fault.
Yes.
And I guess without saying your mom is wrong, which is probably not a tone to take if you want to moms to keep giving these articles to people.
True, true.
They just found a way to say, I think your friends are who you should talk to here and stay away from that dude forever.
Do you think that these, if they are real, or say, let's just say the ones that are real, as we transition from not having anything to maybe having some?
Sure.
That they rewrite some of them?
Oh, I'm sure they get edited a lot. Yes.
Yeah. Because some of these are written in a way that sort of feel not from the source, especially if they're teenage girls. And so, but my point is, like, in the rewriting, it makes me think they're not real, but maybe they are real situations and that the sassy editors are putting too much prose into what they're doing and setting themselves up for the answer, changing the words. Like that thing about, and my mother says it's my fault, doesn't feel like something that they would necessarily say in that way at that place to me.
Right.
Because that's more of a something you internalize, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so this feels like it might have been a real letter that really got changed a lot.
I will say this as a former teen. If you were writing this letter to Sassy, it would be 5 pages long. And they have to boil it down to a paragraph.
Well, that's a really good point, yeah.
So, yeah. So I think you're right.
It's a composite to fit 6 on the help page, too. So here you have no breasts. It's not like, who would spend, I am 16 and haven't had my period and haven't developed any breasts or any pubic hair or hair under my arms. Boys tease me at school. Is there something wrong with me? Concerned. Like, you're right. That's a postcard.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have what he said this month, the question asking, quote unquote, real boys. What do you think of girls who make the first move? It says, it sets the tone with, so you're sitting alone with a gorgeous new boyfriend. The Johnsons, your babysitting clients, won't be back for 3 hours. As a George Michael video flashes across the screen, you have a sudden urge to kiss this guy for the first time, but you're holding back because you're wondering how he'll react. Will he push you away? Look at you like you're from another planet? Call you a sleaze? Nah. Most of these boys told us they like it when a girl makes the first move, if they're interested in the girl. It's a lot of ifs. And I just have to say, you can take a boyfriend to babysitting? Did you take boyfriends to babysitting?
I never had a boyfriend when I was in my babysitting time, so the question was moot in my personal case. But I knew of it happening.
Happening with the parents' knowledge or happening behind their back?
Both.
The Johnsons were very progressive. They also had cable.
So, yeah, there's literally the only decent guy in this entire bunch is the first one, Josh, who thinks it's cool when a girl makes the first move. Then we hear from his brother, Anthony. He thinks it's okay, but whines that it doesn't happen enough. Like, well, maybe that tone is putting things people off. Bro.
These pictures don't seem to match these fake boy names. And so I feel like they could just say we've changed the names to protect the stupid from the shit that they're saying, because they're going to have to live with this forever. So that's not their name or that's not their face, but it's not, but, or their age. It's just trying to make them a little anonymous. Unlike Tony Odell, our celebrity of the month. This made me do another deep dive on Head of the Class, because this was one of my imaginary TV shows where I pictured myself as one of the people,
sure.
one of the kids on Head of the Class. And if I wasn't Simone, I was basically Simone, and I sat in Simone's seat because Simone had mono, and I got to be on Head of the, you know, I was just in the Head of the Class
for aww, Pammy too.
Yeah, made some fanfic in my head at night. And Tony, although he wasn't my boyfriend, would sometimes stick up for me because I had a complicated relationship with, speaking of a baggy suit, look at this photo. Oh my God. That is a lot of suit for one torso.
But it's a coat. It's outerwear. They're so mean about it. They're like, with that dorky jacket, makes you wonder who'd make a move on him anyway. It's a perfectly normal Czech jacket for the time, in my opinion.
Right, but he is the one who's saying, like, if I don't like her, I don't really want her to make the first move.
Yeah.
This is so the complicated stuff that is why I would be Simone with mono on my fanfic Head of the Class, because you're waiting for him to make the first move, but not. And, like, you're going to talk to Arvid, but, like, you can't. And then you maybe Dennis is going to make fun of you every time you talk. And it's like, I want Howard Hessman back. Like, I want Howard Hessman back as my teacher. He's my teacher. What is this? He just left. He just left us. And now we have Billy Connolly. And he's great and all. But, like, we had a thing.
Talk about timelines, Billy Connolly?
Yes, the same. We are calling these guys trash. And they are, by and large. Mostly in the way that they're phrasing this. But, like, I like it when partner makes the first move if I like them is, I feel like, pretty much how everyone feels, right? Like,
this is a universal question, not really one that can really get too much of a difference. Because, like, my answer is, like, anything but tic-tac-toe, yes, please. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like they're being a little hard on old Tony, considering that his answer is pretty reasonable and how I would feel at this time also. A notorious Tiffany profile that kicked off the magazine's crusade against her. Reviews of Hairspray, the original, and Twisted Sister, and so much Johnny Depp. Will we convince Pam to detach her poster of him from the magazine? Find out! For my plug this week, I do another podcast with the oft-mentioned Sarah D. Bunting. It's called Again With This. I mentioned it earlier. Initially, we went episode by episode through all 10 seasons of Beverly Hills 90210, but then we ran out of those, so now we're up to season 3 of Melrose Place. That title is Again With This. It's on all your podcast apps, and we will link it in the show notes.
You can follow Tara on Twitter or Instagram at Tara Ariano. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Pamela Ribbon. You can follow the show on both Twitter and Instagram at Listen to Sassy. Please rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice to help other listeners find us. And thanks to those of you who have already done so.
Yes,
thank you. Remember, visual aids are available for all episodes. Certainly the most crucial, the fashion episode, but for all.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you hit our website. The page link for every episode is in the show notes right on your podcast app, unless you have a terrible podcast app, and maybe you do. Remember, our hotline is open. It is 720-SASSY-GO. We currently have our April 1988 quiz up. It is, how compatible are you with your significant teenage other? Take the quiz, find out. Call the hotline with your tales of compatibility. We'd love to hear them, plus anything we've talked about today, and of course on the pop culture and fashion issues to follow. All that good stuff is at listentosassy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here for the pop culture episode.
Bye.
Kind of exhausted, to tell you the truth.
No kidding.
I know. You laughed your dinker off.
Dinker? I thought I misheard it.
What did you think you heard?
I thought it was dink or something, or dinky or something like that, but dinker is just like the absolute wrong amount of mustard to put on.
Mustard is also wrong in itself.
That was deliberate choice.
All right, moving on.